Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Show. Welcome back to an amazing podcast episode of Employee Cycle, where we talk about HR trends, HR tech, and HR data. And I am so happy and excited to announce our next guest, Talia Edmondson from RevZilla.
Hi.
Thank you for coming on the show.
I'm excited.
Woo!
Yay!
our standard... Level of enthusiasm for all of our guests because we're so excited for you to be here.
Thanks.
So thanks for taking time out of your busy HR schedule. We know that almost all HR people have way too many things to do in the 8, 10, 12 hours per day that they work.
Yeah.
So thank you for taking an hour out of your busy day. Really appreciate you here. So to jump right into it, I have to ask you a very important question.
Okay.
And that is, how did you make it into the wonderful world of HR?
So it's kind of funny. It seems there's folks who say that this is the function that they chose. I am in the group of people who like to say they fell into it. I'm not a huge fan of admitting that, but that's really my truth.
That's okay. That's all right.
I came up running payroll. So, you know, you got to start somewhere, right? And I was always kind of interested, compelled, really wanting to do a lot more from the people side. So I kind of hammered my way through, went back to school because it wasn't something that I had originally planned on, did the SPHR thing and, you know, credentials and that whole alphabet soup at the end of your name is certainly not the be-all, end-all, but it really helped me practically apply everything that I was doing every day. So that's really how I got into it. I'm kind of obsessed with it, not to a point where you can read all of these blogs that I write or tweets that I send, but it is something that I'm wildly passionate about, and it's working with people is pretty much the best thing I could have ever imagined.
Well, that's great because people who hate their jobs are only working to then hope that they can get to the weekend.
Agreed.
So Monday through Friday, I hate my week, and then only living for the weekends, it's terrible. So the fact that you're so passionate about it, I know that we're going to have an amazing episode, and I know that everyone at your company is being taken care of because you care so much. So to dig into that story and to dig into your journey of HR a little bit more, I would like to dig into your experience. It seems that you've had an impressive and diverse HR career in retail, healthcare, e-commerce, and engineering. Is that right?
You've been creeping my LinkedIn.
I have. I'm a little bit of a stalker when it comes to the podcast.
That's hilarious.
I am a little bit of a stalker. I did actually have to click on the more positions to see all of the positions that you've had, so which is great.
Yeah.
So my question that I know I'm interested in, but I think the listeners will be interested in as well, is what were the biggest differences about HR and working in HR in all of those different industries, mm-hmm. but also what was the common theme and what remained the same in all those industries?
That is a great question. So you're right. My LinkedIn history is pretty accurate. At the time when I started out in retail, the focus was still very much on brick and mortar. People were going, they were physically going shopping. E-commerce wasn't really thought of. There was quite the ride in, I got to experience retail in its heyday. When that basically started to take a turn and my career path sort of took a turn with that, I ended up moving to a company that was starting to focus more heavily on the e-commerce side of the business, realizing that they had to stay ahead of this trend and people were staying home to shop more frequently than they were going to the store. In that time, I did really like I said, my path kind of took a turn. I was able to focus more on the people side rather than the kind of tactical day-to-day. My function became a little bit more strategic. Once that that company and retail kind of got really sideways, I thought it was time to kind of expand a little bit. Healthcare is an industry that is ever-changing, especially in this country. It's an industry, I believe I read recently, it's the fourth largest industry in the United States, which when you think of healthcare, you would rather not, I personally would rather not think of it in as an industry, but it really is.
Right. Yeah.
So healthcare as an industry, I thought, you know, it would be an interesting turn. And I learned a ton. Most specifically, I learned that I am not a recruiter. I was tasked with recruiting nurses. That in itself is a beast that I commend anyone who does that on a regular basis. And that has nothing to do with nurses. It has everything to do with recruiting. It just wasn't my thing. If you bring me people, I will make sure that they are able to grow. But I don't want to be the one that goes and finds the people. And I was really bad at it, if I'm being completely honest. And when I realized that, you know, around that time, lots of things were happening in the country. Laws were changing, and it was pretty obvious that manufacturing was really trying to make its way back into the United States. Certain things were getting a whole lot more expensive to actually manufacture overseas and then have them shipped back. So there was a trend to bring manufacturing back to the States, and I thought, well, that's an industry that I haven't tried before. And I spent about a year in the HR support function for a manufacturing company, and that was really, really cool. I was fortunate to work in an office that actually had a machine shop attached to it, so I could go out and see product actually being made. And, you know, the folks that were running the machines, heavy machines all the way down to super light assembly, and how much detail goes into something you would never even imagine, like, you know, paint on a glass tube and how that's screened on. It was really amazing. And then when my time there looked like it was probably best for me to move on, is how I found RevZilla, which has so far surpassed any expectation I've ever had for working in this function, but also RevZilla was my first startup. And it's startup HR is the craziest, most fun kind of animal you could ever get into. It's super scary, but it's the best kind of scary. And I think all throughout all of the positions that I've had in the different types of industries that I've been in, and now having been at RevZilla, which was a startup when I came and is now has now graduated from that category, the most common theme for me is making sure that people always feel like they have the opportunity to grow. They always have the opportunity to be honest. They always have the opportunity to be open. And my style needs to be consistent so that I am every single day showing up in a way that folks can expect of me. And in turn, I think that makes them more comfortable to be open, to be honest, to feel like they can grow. And at times, you know, it's a struggle, and you, as the HR person responsible for all of the aspects of people, you really have to figure out how you're not going to necessarily change your style, but kind of curtail your approach, if that makes sense. So you can't walk into a new company assuming everyone's going to be the same and everyone is going to be accepting of your style. Lord knows I had to really adjust when I came to RevZilla, because it was a startup. I kind of came in and made the mistake initially that everyone wanted to hear everything I had to say, and we had to do everything that I thought was a good idea, when in reality, when there's only 30 people and I was coming from places that had several hundred, you know, our co-founders would stare at me and just be like, what have we gotten ourselves into? Please just go sit over there and leave us alone. It wasn't as strategic as it needed to be, but I was so excited to do all of these things and really make sure that as RevZilla grew, all of the things that I had done in previous and previous employers, I had the opportunity to do here because I believed in it very strongly. But folks need to, the consistent theme is folks need to feel like they're fostered. They need to feel like they're able to grow and be honest, and be open about what it is that they want to do for the company, what it is that they want to do in their life. I've never been one to say, you know, keep your life outside of work, because that's literally impossible. You are human and you come to work every day. Therefore, all of your human interactions and problems and things in your life are going to come to work with you. So we need to be understanding of that. And that's something that I've always tried to do through all of my employers.
Wow. That answer was just as impressive as your...
That's really long answer.
No, that was great. And that answer was just as impressive as your career.
Oh, thanks.
There are so many questions that I need to ask about that. I can't ask all of them because we wouldn't get done the podcast, but I do have two.
Yeah, how long questions. Is this? Because I just will keep going.
I'll tell you when.
Okay.
I'll tell you when to go.
Okay.
But two questions I need to unpack from that. One, why were you bad at recruiting? Was that because of the sometimes transactional and high velocity and high volume nature of the function, or you just sucked at it?
Kind of both. I'm an excellent dream.
Okay.
I can sell any dream. But when it comes to sourcing and really understanding what someone needs to bring to a position that we're trying to fill, I kind of missed the mark. I would get, and then I would feel kind of like personally rejected. A friend of mine likes to say, and this is a friend of mine in the function, don't fall in love with somebody who never calls you back, which is funny because that can be applied to work and life in general. But recruiting is a very, I think it's extremely specialized. I think it's more specialized than some folks give credit to. And, you know, the never giving up, basically, when you're rejected so often is really tough. And I, you know, it's maybe a little bit too personal for me, but also because I think I just genuinely sucked at it. We've got two folks on the Revzilla recruiting team who are fantastic at finding the talent that we're able to attract and collect and maintain. I am amazed by them, because it is truly a skill that I never was able to master.
Got it. And I love that saying, don't fall in love with people who won't call you back.
Right.
Especially in the personal side of things.
Yeah.
But I think now with technology, yeah, a lot of people out there need to hear, don't fall in love with people who don't text you or chat you back.
Yeah, or I've been married for 6 years, so that was well after the whole swipe right, swipe left. I honestly don't know what any of that stuff means.
Good for you.
So,
good for you.
Yeah.
I'm married too, so neither do I.
It sounds terrible. But
it does. It does sound terrible. And the second question that I wanted to ask you, which I didn't have prepared before, but it's something that I always think about, because you started to see the shift of brick and mortars falling apart and shopping going online, something that I think about all the time, especially working downtown Center City, Philadelphia, and seeing so many brick and mortar stores close every day, where are all of these people going to work? And I didn't know if you had any insights or thoughts about that.
Yeah, well, first of all, Revzilla is always hiring, so plug. But
additionally, nice.
I think what I've seen some folks do really well is realize that this change is coming. And I don't think realizing the change is coming has to do with, you know, what level you are in your career or, you know, a certain function that you've been. And I think if, you know, everyone has access to either reading or listening to something, regardless of your socioeconomic status. You can go to free libraries all the way up through, you know, downloading whatever periodical it is that you want to have on your e-reader. Everyone's got access to something. So I think if you're able to realize I am in an industry, I am in a position, I am in a function that could potentially be obsolete, I think folks could do what I've seen a lot of them do in trying to figure out what the alternative is. So if brick and mortar is closing and e-commerce is what's picking up, you don't necessarily have to learn how to go out there and do, you know, keyword searches and master the SEO SEM function to hammer your way into e-com. The product is coming from somewhere. So I know that, you know, folks feel a certain kind of way about Amazon, and then we've got Jet in the mix and all of these other things, but they have fulfillment centers. Those fulfillment centers need talent. They're popping up all over the place. So though brick and mortar is shifting to e-commerce, there's still a need for talent. The product remains the same. It's just where it's coming from that's different. If companies, you know, it is unfortunate that some of these companies are closing altogether, but specifically to your point about brick and mortar closing up with the shift to e-com, again, if the company is remaining open, the product is still there. The product remains the same. It's just different for where it's coming from. So in any industry, you know, the shift to, you know, solar energy or renewable resources versus, you know, where energy previously came from, if it's not being mined, then perhaps maybe relearning a skill in, you know, manufacturing the solar panels that people are going to start really, I think, using and embracing a whole lot more now. You know, it's just kind of being conscious of that shift and then doing everything that we can to make sure that whatever the position is, the function, it just, if it feels like it's going to become obsolete, then really try to stay ahead of that and adopt early rather than be in kind of a little bit of a denial.
Great. So before we move forward and go into your role at RevZilla, can you just give the listeners a quick summary and some insight into what RevZilla does and what is RevZilla?
Yes. RevZilla is currently located in the Navy Yard in South Philadelphia. We absolutely love being Navy Yard residents. And RevZilla is a motorcycle, it's an e-commerce company, but we sell motorcycle apparel, accessories, and hard parts. And we also have a media and content arm where if you went to RevZilla's YouTube channel, you can see three different segment kind of on-air, I guess, like personalities who are responsible for researching all of the products that we sell and then doing product reviews that are actually pretty hilarious. So there we do inject quite a bit of humor into a lot of our product reviews. So we've got the e-commerce side of things, and then we've also got this really, really cool media and content arm to it. So if you bought a motorcycle and you had no idea what you needed to purchase, you could either go online and do the research yourself, or we actually have a contact center where we've got 45 or so folks who could outfit you from head to toe on what you needed to ride your motorcycle or your scooter even safely.
Nice. So now that we know about all the awesomeness of RevZilla, mm-hmm. you work at a pretty exciting company, and there seems to have been a ton of changes in the past 2 years.
Yes.
I think you had a new CEO, a new partnership that maybe was a merger or not merger. I'm not quite sure what that was.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how all of that change has affected you and the HR team.
Oh, so we work. RevZilla is amazing. When I said before, it so far exceeded any expectations I had. It's because I didn't think everything that we were doing so well already could actually not only maintain itself and be sustainable, and it's proven to be scalable. And I was surprised because we work really hard, and that's why when you kind of like read about us or you see some of the stuff in the news, you know, you kind of, some folks, I think, are a little bit skeptical and of believing the hype. And then when they get here, they realize it's pretty real. It's very real. And for the HR team, you know, when I came on, we were sub 50. I think it was like 30, 35 or 45. And now we're about 250. And that's been in over the last 5 years. So the HR team has grown, the ratio of HR folks to number of employees that we have is close. Well, it's actually small rather, but when I say close, I mean the size of the team is small, and that's by design. We didn't want to have this kind of overwhelming number of HR people, so folks would be confused as to who does what. There's no confusion. Everyone knows who is supposed to be working with who every day and what the function does as a whole. What I enjoy most about having this HR team is we do an excellent job of hiring. It's a little tough to get hired here. Our hiring process is lengthy, but we are very honest with all of our candidates, so we don't get feedback about, you know, how long it takes to get hired. We are constantly in contact with folks during every step of the process. So when I say the hiring process is long, it's not because there's lag time in communication. It's just because we are careful and we do a very thorough interview process. That in itself has made being part of this, like, having this HR team a little bit, I want to say, easy from the people side. We don't experience the types of issues that larger companies without a clearly defined culture experience. So that really allows us to focus on more strategic elements of the function. Long-term, we'll put together programs for the long-term so folks know how they can get into a job shadow program and learn more about a department. Or they know, we've got an employee referral program that doesn't necessarily reward only if, you know, you refer to manager or director of this high-level position. It's a constant kind of milestone program that runs throughout the entire year. We intentionally build things for the long term, and to my point before, because we hire so well, it really allows us to focus on some of these bigger picture things because we are not consistently, you know, bombarded with a lot of the issues that I know larger companies have to deal with. And we're very fortunate in that way. It really allows us to stay more strategic and proactive than just kind of this reactional group of people constantly putting out fires.
Nice. So on your LinkedIn profile description, you have the title People Enthusiast.
Mm-hmm.
But under your actual job title, it's Director of HR.
Yeah.
So I'm asking because I'm seeing a trend of HR professionals now use the word people in their HR title, such as people operations, chief people officer, etc. So this is a question that I like to ask all of our guests. Is this HR trying to have a cooler title, or is there a bigger reason why this trend is happening?
I don't know, man. It's like, it's so funny. I always thought that the title of chief people officer sounded really cool, but that was like, I don't know. I think the first time I ever saw something like that was like 5 or 10 years ago. And that before, I guess it was really popular. And now it's just kind of like, if you can't actually describe what you do every day, and if someone introduces themselves to you as like the chief people officer of such and such a company, I mean, don't get me wrong, titles have their place. But if you can't actually describe what it is that you're doing, then I don't know what good your big fancy title is. And I don't mean to sound rude, but in the environment that I've been in for 5 years, titles were never a very big deal here. And when we got bigger and, you know, when some of these sort of company level transactions were happening, we thought, okay, well, maybe it's time to assign a bit of a formality to some of the players because it made it easier for people to relate to, other than my original title, which was something like Human Rev Sources Leader, because it sounded fun. So, you know, and we do have a bit of, you know, we inject a lot of our orange, which is it's our signature color. So we do have orange injected into a lot of things for cultural reasons as well. But sometimes the public-facing element does need to be paid attention to. But I'm more of a, tell me what it is that you're doing. Like, tell me what you're excited about at work. Tell me what's really cool for you right now. Tell me why you are even in the function. I think a lot of times that gets lost, too, when people try to figure out what they want their people operations title to be.
This is interesting, and I'm sure we're going to get a lot of comments on that, because it seems to be a little bit more controversial than I thought.
I'm not going to make any friends by saying what I just said. So,
it's okay.
I mean, but there's, you know, that's something like you know, you that I would put in the same category of, like, everyone who probably thinks, like, the, what is it, the Harvard Business Review articles that aren't very kind of, you know, HR is obsolete and, you know, get rid of your annual review process. There's all kinds of things that people have very strong feelings about in this function, but I also think that's what makes it great. It needs to be debated. People are changing. The function needs to change along with it. Companies are opening and closing and people are all over the place. And, you know, I think it's great to have healthy debate and conversation around all of these things. And I'd be happy if someone changed my mind. I'll just say that.
Well, the next HR event you go to, if you get some weird stares, you don't know why.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I'm definitely not going to make any friends.
So you were a previous speaker at the Disrupt HR event in Philadelphia, which you did an amazing job. We'll definitely have a link in the show notes.
Oh, cool.
But you gave a talk titled Engagement Balls.
I did.
You made some very, love the title, by the way. And you made some very interesting points that I wanted to ask you about.
Sure.
So you came out with a very bold line, very bold opening line as soon as you started. You said, ping pong, foosball, and pool in the office is not culture. It's not engagement. And it definitely has nothing to do with employee engagement.
Right.
So, again, going to the opposing view of a lot of, especially startups, like, oh, we got to get our foosball.
Yeah.
We have to get our ping pong. Here's the beer. Here's the free dry cleaning and breakfast, lunch, and dinner on us all day long, 24/7, especially with you being a startup and a very successful startup. That's a very opposing view. So what does that line mean? Why did you want to say that? Why was that your opening line?
So we have all of those things, as many, many startups do. And they are there as an outlet. They're not there because they make people happy or because they, you know, we want to encourage people to come in early and stay late and all of those things. That they're activities that people can do when they have, you know, free time. That's not what drives engagement, though. No one comes to work because they can't wait to play foosball. People come to work because they're excited about the job that they have. You know, these things were kind of a nod to being a startup, yes. But at the same time, while those things were always made available, the other thing that RevZilla has done an excellent job of, something I never thought I would see a company actually do this. You just kind of like read about people doing it, but you never actually get to live it. So it's a huge privilege for me. But the other thing that RevZilla does really well, while they're offering, you know, the classic startup flair, was they were offering very, very transparent insight into company growth, how well we were doing, what the goals were, how you as an individual contributor and the work that you do drives us as a company to meet those goals every day. And then you get really excited about it, and then you're like, hey, let's go play ping pong. You know, it's kind of like the afterthought, like, hey, this is great. I love working here. I like you because I like you as a coworker. Let's go over here and do this thing, play this game. It was kind of like an outlet for folks who genuinely enjoyed working together, who wanted to spend more time together, and they would just do it at work, so we provided them activities. That is not what drives engagement. Is it fun to have beer? Of course. But that's not why people are coming to work. People are coming to work because I like to believe that they love the job that they do. And if they don't love it, then that's where HR really needs to figure out, I think, you know, where the disconnect was. Was it at the hiring stage? Is it because they don't quite understand how what they do every day fits into the greater organization, which is kind of largely based on what engagement balls is. And it was really, you have all these games that have balls, but do you actually have them yourself to get into these hard conversations with people when you realize maybe they're not engaged, or you're trying to figure out what it is that would make them more excited to come to work every day? Do they understand the company goals? Do they understand the department's goals? Do they understand where you're going as an organization? So I was very fortunate to inherit much of the already transparent nature of the business when I came on. And as, you know, as the function, as the leader of this function, I've been really proud to carry that transparency all the way through. So we do have the conversations that I spoke to in the engagement balls talk. I'd be more than happy to share a lot of the questions that we ask folks. We do it frequently, and we are very direct with the questions that we ask. And in return, we have been very fortunate to receive feedback that has not only made managers realize where they've kind of had some missteps, but also gives us the tools that we need to build these future programs that I talked about earlier and make sure that we're doing everything we can to keep folks excited about coming here because of the job, not because of the pool table.
Excellent answer, and I totally agree. So the next thing that I want to ask you about in your engagement balls, by the way, engagement balls, I now get it. Makes total sense. Yeah. So the next question that I want to ask you about your talk was that you also said HR needs to meet employees where they are. So can you provide some insight into that?
First of all, I can't take credit for this. So if anyone that listens to this podcast isn't familiar with who Steve Brown is, and that's Brown with an E on the end, Steve Brown is a force. That man is the biggest people champion I've ever met in my entire life. He has a blog. He's super engaging on Twitter. His hashtag is always HR positive. But he's not like the rainbow glitter, everything is awesome HR guy. He's very real. And he just does it in a really fantastic way. And one of the things that I look forward to every time I hear him speak is when he inserts that line of meeting people where they are. And I had all of his contact information, or every way that you can follow him, is on that slide in my talk. But meeting people where they are is as simple as it is. If someone comes to you and they are angry, there's absolutely no need to shut that anger down. It needs time to breathe, and you need to acknowledge that someone is upset. It's not the function's job to. No one wants to have you say like, oh, it's going to be okay, and have you put their arm around them. That's not what that is. You need to acknowledge the feelings. You need to empathize with them if you can. You need to let it breathe. You need to, you know, acknowledge that all of this is there, and then kind of address it in pieces. And then in the end of the conversation, maybe they're not as angry as they were when they came in to talk to you. The goal is not to diffuse all of it. The goal is to actively address it, meet them where they are, try to figure out what's causing all of these things to happen, and then help them move forward. So a lot of times, you know, especially old school HR was kind of looked at as this person that would just plan parties and give you a hug if that's what you needed. But that's not what the role is being called for now. And I think only working to make people feel good, it does not build the profession. And meeting people where they are is, I think, really key to, in any organization, helping communicate what the function is going to be doing. Acknowledging feelings, making sure that you have an understanding of where they're coming from, and then in the end, if that results in them being happier than they were when they came to talk to you, great. But if not, that's okay too, because you learned something about that person, and it's not going to be your job to make people happy or sad, but more understand them.
Sorry to interrupt your podcast, but I have some questions for my HR leaders listening. Are you currently drowning in spreadsheets or having to log into too many different systems for all your workforce data? Are you spending way too much time creating HR reports with no time left to actually analyze the data? Are you tired of being the only executive without a dashboard to share with the leadership team? If this sounds like you, then check out Employee Cycle, the HR metrics dashboard built to solve this problem. Employee Cycle brings all your workforce data together into a user-friendly dashboard by connecting to all your HR systems and spreadsheets. Sign up for access to the beta now at employeecycle.com and learn how to get your HR source of truth. Again, that's employeecycle.com. Now back to the amazing podcast episode.
That was awesome. So now it's time to have the section, which I like to call questions from the field. And this is where I get other HR professionals to submit questions for our guests. Okay. So I was fortunate enough to get a couple questions from Julie Clark at Capital Consulting Group. Hi, Julie. And her first question, hey, Julie, how you doing? And her first question was, what's your biggest challenge in attracting quality candidates?
Talent in Philadelphia is interesting in that where's Julie located? Do we know? You said the name of her company, but where's she located?
I believe she's located outside of Philadelphia.
Okay, then I'll just kind of answer that more broadly then instead of so specifically to the Philly area. Quality candidates.
Well, actually right outside of Philadelphia.
So not too far, but talent in this area is kind of interesting in that we've got all these amazing people who graduate from every college that I'm jealous that I never attended, and then they leave because they don't really know a lot about the companies and all the great places that you could work in this area. So attracting talent obviously starts with a lot of how the company is, you know, positioned in the space, positioned in the marketplace. And though working at Revzilla is really fun, it's highly unusual that every single company can do what it is that we do here. So you have to find all of the things that you know about your company are great and market them heavily. Be present. I know if I said job fairs that, you know, a few people will probably, you know, kind of like cringe at the idea. But if you're having difficulty, first of all, getting a quantity of candidates, that's a really great way to get yourself out there. From the quality side of things, we do a lot with scorecards. We recruit very carefully. So what we do is we sit with managers, the hiring managers, and we ask them to put together a list of core competencies that are must-haves of every candidate. And that not only helps the recruiter find through phone screens and through even in-person interviews where they're hitting the key qualities of this job, but that scorecard also helps every single person who is part of the interview process properly vet all of the candidates for these core competencies. So I think a lot of it has to do with, depending on the types of challenges that Julie might be having, one, make sure your company is being branded and marketed appropriately. Be in control of that messaging that's getting out there. Indeed, as much as I love them, it's not the be-all, end-all for where you're putting your jobs and where you're spending your money. There's a big social component now that's being used to attract a number of candidates, the Facebooks, the Twitter, the Instagram. A lot of those things that kind of seem odd have really done a lot for candidate generation, and that's another area where I think the HR function can do a better job of connecting with candidates. And then I'm a firm believer in that scorecard. If everyone that's not involved in the process doesn't have a 100% understanding on what the candidate looks like, then you're never going to have the type of successful outcome of those recruiting efforts that you're looking for.
Nice. So
hopefully that answered Julie's question.
Oh, yeah. Julie, thanks for sending in the questions. So yeah. We've already established that I stalked your LinkedIn profile, and I saw that you went to Villanova to get your HR degree. And I don't have any statistics around this, but I'm assuming that a lot of people who end up in HR don't have a degree in HR.
Yeah, so, that's okay.
So
I'm going to back up, though, real quick. I actually did not attend Villanova for college. What I went to Villanova for was when I was studying for the SPHR exam. Villanova offers HRCI courses to help you pass that test. It's an extremely difficult test. And Villanova, at the time, I think they still do it, but they were offering a full semester of basically help in passing this test. So I went to Holy Family University for my undergrad and grad, but Villanova was a great resource for taking that certification test.
Oh, great. And thanks for that context. So my question was, what advice do you have to aspiring HR professionals who are actually going to school for HR?
Yeah. If you're going to school for HR, I think it's incredible because I never thought to myself, I want to graduate high school and go be in HR. So I think the kind of like increasing trend of folks that are going into college as HR majors has a lot to do with everything that's happening in the world. And it makes me really happy because there are so many, you know, so many shifts in the types of employees that we're getting. So many changes in, you know, external environmental factors that are really, you know, employers really have to make changes to accommodate and stay legal, basically. But there are so many things to learn and do, and I think it's really great. But your earlier question about, you know, school and is it necessary? I don't believe college is the be-all, end-all for things. I think once folks get into it a little bit more, they'll realize maybe it's something that they want to go back and do, and that's great. But if you're just starting out, or you're not really sure what to do, or perhaps you're a recruiter and you want to shift over to maybe the people day-to-day side of things, I would say read as much as you can, but also be very mindful of what it is that you're letting in. And I think that's, I would also make that recommendation for life in general, but from the professional side of things, be mindful of the type of HR material that you're looking at. If it doesn't align with your style and it doesn't make you feel good, don't ever look at it again, because all it will do is help you, or all it will do is make you less excited about the profession, because there's a lot out there that's crazy. The other thing I would say is, if you're not going to go to school for HR, there are a lot of certifications out there that will help you at least get the legal foundation in things, so that you're not opening up your companies to any sort of exposure because you didn't make the right decision. That part of it's really important. So make sure that you're appropriately situated to handle increasingly difficult employee situations. And by increasingly difficult, I mean very intricate conversations around, you know, perhaps you have a trans employee or you have someone that's in transition. You want to make sure that you're handling those things in the human way. Number one, always have to be a human being. But two, making sure that you're fully understanding how to handle these, like I said, increasingly difficult situations. And then outside of that, I would say networking. But to be completely honest, up until maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, I hated networking and I would actively avoid it because I found myself speaking with folks that I couldn't relate to on any level. And I thought that everyone in HR was just going to be like this. And as I tried to kind of grow my tribe, it was disheartening. And then I found the HR startup community. And going to events like Disrupt HR and finding who inspired me. And then when you find those people, find out who they are following. Reach out to them and see who they're reading. And don't be afraid to send them a note. You would be amazed at the people that respond. I never thought in a million years half of the people that I would admire on Twitter from like 140 eloquent characters away, thinking that they're the greatest HR people I could ever meet, would respond to a message that I sent them. So don't be afraid to reach out either. Those would be my recommendations.
The reaching out on social media is so clutch and so key. That's actually how I find some of our podcast guests as well.
Except, I mean, and you and I had the opportunity to meet at that same Disrupt event.
We did.
But there's absolutely nothing worse than just a cold LinkedIn invite. Like, hi, join my network. No. But, you know, something like, hey, I heard you on this podcast, or I saw RevZilla in the news and, you know, I want to know as an HR person how you feel about this thing over here. Be a little bit more specific. I'm more than happy to talk to anyone, and we've had some folks come in and visit with my team to learn a little bit more about what we do here and how we do it. And we are happy to teach and give insight at any time. But the ask and the reach out really go a long way.
So sticking with the theme of going to school for HR, yeah. A lot of people outside of HR look at people who work in the space and think they don't understand the business, they don't really have business acumen, and that has really kept them out of that upper inner circle of decision makers and, you know, I hate to use it, but seat at the table. So what other classes and or areas do you think aspiring HR professionals should start to study? Is it marketing, business management? What other things would allow them to be better at their job and a more well-rounded professional?
Yeah, so when I said earlier, eventually folks will feel like they want to go back to school, that's kind of why. So if you want to get in, there's a lot of ways to get in, but to actually grow, you will probably need to make that secondary effort. It will be a lot more difficult if you are in an environment that's not willing to take the time to teach. If you are in an environment that's willing to take the time to teach, obviously figure out who all of the key players are and try to, in an unintrusive way, spend as much time with them as possible. I think it's extremely valuable to build up social capital in a way that folks will be receptive to your approach and the way that you want to learn. But as far as studying and what to look at, I like to tell people, figure out what your C-suite reads and read it. So if you look down in your CFO's office, or if you have access to your CFO or anyone that, you know, is a direct extension of the C-suite, and they're reading the Wall Street Journal, you need to be reading that. If you figure out what kind of books they like to read on the weekend, you need to be reading those books too, so that if they mention, you know, a new kind of process or plan, you'll know exactly where that came from, and you'll be able to actively participate in that conversation. Everyone should know how to read any sort of balance sheet, P&L, budget, know what all of these financial acronyms are. I am not a numbers person by any means, but when we're in a meeting and it's decision time, I know what I'm looking at. So no, you don't have to go take calculus, but you do need to know how to read a budget. You need to learn how to write a proposal and ask for money in the right way. That is a very difficult thing to do, especially when in some environments, HR is not viewed as a profit center in any way. It's more of a cost center. But in turn, you need to be able to communicate in the appropriate metrics. Do you know how much it costs for you to recruit and hire and train so that you can put turnover into a dollar figure and then communicate why retention efforts are worth every penny? So it's nuances in that way that don't that aren't really learned until either you've been in it and you've been doing it for a while and you've practiced, or you do have that in your education background.
I hope new and or aspiring HR professionals are taking notes, because you just got dropped a lot of wisdom. You got a lot of gems right there. So yeah, I hope you were paying attention. So now we're at a very fun section, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. But I ask you a couple random questions, which is my favorite part of the show.
So, okay.
Not sure if you heard the last episode, but if you did, you would know that I'm obsessed with bread pudding. So to see if we can actually become friends, I need to know if you like bread pudding, and if so, how do you like it made?
Holy cow. So if I have bread pudding, I will probably need to go to the hospital, but that doesn't mean
that
I don't love it. I love all bread. The fact that it hates me makes me sad, because it's the vessel for everything that's wonderful. I love bread. I just wish it didn't want to kill me.
Oh no. All right.
Hopefully that doesn't mean that we can't
be bread. Well, that's above and beyond your taste preference. And so yes, we still could be friends.
Okay, good.
So the next question, because you worked in retail when, let's just call it the glory days, where malls were filled and stores were packed all the time, and now you work in an online e-commerce experience, how has that affected your own personal shopping? Do you foreclose? Are you more shopping online because you don't have time for it? Or are you the person that says, I need to try everything on when it comes to groceries? Are you Amazon Fresh, Blue Apron? You choose how you get your food, or you know, I need to taste the grapes and look at the chicken. Where are you with your shopping?
I do physically go to the grocery store, though I am not a grape taster. I like to choose my own food. On Sundays, if I'm in the middle of a Sunday fun day, it's not when I want to go to the grocery store. But, you know, I do like to go to the grocery store. I like to pick my own food. I like to try my own clothes on. It is unusual that I will, first of all, jeans, because that is a very real struggle. I will never order jeans online, even if it's a pair that I had before. I swear they never fit the same. I will say, though, that I do buy shoes online, mostly because the company that my husband works for has a lovely employee discount, and they run true to size, so I'm a beneficiary of that wonderful employee discount. So, but I guess I do a little bit of both. I try really hard to shop in person. I could do a better job of shopping locally, though, I will admit that. But I do try to shop in person. I don't know. I like it. There's just something to it. Like, I'm not annoyed when I have to go to the store. I don't know.
I'm the same way. For clothes, I'm definitely trying them on. For random stuff, a random battery or, I don't know, toilet paper or any just random commodity, I'm definitely going to Amazon. I hate shopping for that stuff. And for food, I'll go to the market. Although I'm really looking and getting excited to start doing online grocery shopping too. I hate going to the grocery store.
I love coupons. And I don't know how to use them online, but I love coupons. I love bonus points. I love anytime I can get something for free. So sometimes you can't do that online.
That's true. And last question of this lightning round. Yeah. What's your most annoying corporate jargon word or term? So the circle backs, the synergies, the move the needle, what really makes you just want to punch someone or make the hair stand on your arm or just make you want to walk away?
You actually used the word earlier, and I'm like stunned by where this has come from, and I don't know if it's recent or people I know have just started recently using this. The let's unpack that. I immediately think about a suitcase, and I don't know. So that's kind of new, but, you know, seat at the table is super annoying for everyone. I think it's, you know, it's something that a lot of people want, but I got to tell you, you earn it. You genuinely earn it. So I feel very strongly, I have a very strong response to that, like on a personal level, when someone says seat at the table. So as soon as I hear those words, I immediately go somewhere else because I have a response that I want to give, but usually when someone says seat at the table, it's not the appropriate time for that response. So I end up keeping it to myself, and then maybe I will reach out to them after and just say, hey, let's talk more about that. So seat at the table is not my favorite, and unpacking maybe because I want to pack a suitcase and go somewhere, so the fact that I'm unpacking means I didn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or I've returned something, but yeah.
So moving forward, I'll make sure I take that out on a future podcast so that you can continue to listen.
It might not trigger somebody the way that it does me, but yeah.
So last question, favorite and least favorite part of HR?
My favorite part of HR is how constantly employees change and what their and their needs change. It's my favorite. I think, you know, I also I fully subscribe to the 10,000 hour rule. That's a Malcolm Gladwell reference for folks who may not be familiar. Malcolm Gladwell is fantastic. But if you're not familiar, the 10,000 hour rule simply means you have to do something for 10,000 hours before you can say that you're an expert. So you figure if you're a full-time employee, you work 2,000 plus hours a year. So say 5 years, right? You're supposed to be an expert. But the thing about HR is that you're never going to be an expert no matter how many hours you're in it, because people always change. And I love it so much because it's this ever-evolving challenge that you have to stay on top of constantly, and you have to figure out the best ways to do that. The constant change in people is my favorite part of HR. It's always new. My least favorite part of HR. So my immediate reaction was legislation, but then now I'm thinking of, so I'll stick with that response, legislation. And then the employees who, when they don't get their way, think you didn't do your job well. So that kind of explains itself. The legislation piece, specifically because it scares people, and there's a lot happening in the world, and they don't know how it affects them, and they don't know who to talk to or how to, you know, kind of discuss a lot of the emotions that they're feeling. So, you know, we are actively looking into a wellness program that is kind of like an on-site EAP of sorts to kind of help folks through those challenges that they're facing right now emotionally. So that's my least favorite, is the amount of fear. I think that everything that's happening in the world is really putting on folks right now. And I'll be completely honest, that is not, you know, that's not something that I... You need a different type of professional, and I can't be that person for you, but I will help you get the resources that you need. So it makes me sad when folks are scared. That's the most frustrating part. That, and then the people who don't get their way.
Well, we all feel the same way about people like that.
Yeah.
Talia, I've had the pleasure of meeting you in person, and now I've had the pleasure of having a very fun and awesome one-on-one with you. I thank you so much for being on the podcast, sharing all your insight, wisdom, and knowledge and experience with me and all the listeners in our HR community. So I just want to give you a huge employee cycle round of applause, and woo! Thank you so much for being on the podcast. This was so amazing. So before you go, I just want to know, how can people find you, learn more about you and RevZilla, and also, are you hiring?
Okay. Yes, we are hiring for all types of positions right now. So you can go to RevZilla, which is Rev, like Rev Your Engines, and Zilla, like Godzilla.com/careers to see all of our openings. You can get a lot of insight into who we are, what we do, what we're about. Core values are listed there too. We hire by them. We also fire by them. They're real living, breathing things. So go to the website, check us out. You can reach out to me directly. My email address is Talia@RevZilla.com. So just, you know, super basic. I'm on Twitter. I'm not super active on it. So if you're willing to sort through my rants about fantasy football, musings about scotch, and all kinds of things that don't have to do with HR, my handle is on my LinkedIn, and you can also find me there on LinkedIn as well. So Talia Edmondson on LinkedIn, and I'd be more than happy to answer questions or connect, or we can meet in person as well. I'm happy to make myself available to anyone that wants to learn, talk about things, or if you want to debate chief people officer titles, I'm game for that too.
Well, you've heard it, folks. Talia is up for debate, and she's also provided the link to her career page, which we'll put in the show notes. So thanks again, yes. Talia. Well, folks, we did it again. Let's give a huge round of applause again to Talia for taking the time out of her busy schedule, because we all know HR people are super, super busy, to share her thoughts and wisdom with our HR community. Stay tuned for our next episode, and until then, continue to attract, engage, and retain the best workforce possible. Later, kids.
Thanks, Bruce.